And welcome to another edition of the Polk Institute podcast. And thank you so much for joining me today. I am your host, Michael Manahan. Hey, you know, if you've been listening to our podcasts, you know that the Polk Institute is an organization. It's a nonprofit organization. We are here to help entrepreneurs, underserved minorities. Now, you don't have to be an underserved minority to be part of the Polk Institute, but basically what we're doing, we're providing a 1 year, we like to think of it as a master's level educational program in entrepreneurship. We follow that with a 6 to 12 month participation in our incubator accelerator program, where our students are hooked up with mentors and experts who can help them launch their business. And then finally, if we keep our fingers crossed, we can help our students present their story to funding sources if need be to get their businesses funded. So that's what the Polk Institute is all about. We're a nonprofit, and our students pay zero. Our students pay zero tuition fees. All of the tuition fees are covered by corporate and foundational donations. So that's the program. If you know somebody who might be interested in getting an education in entrepreneurship, please send them to our website, polk-ise.org. But we're doing the podcast for a couple of different reasons. One reason is we want to tell people about the Polk Institute and what we're doing. But in addition to that, we like to think of our podcasts as resources for small business people, entrepreneurs, that they can use in their business lives. And that could be anything from marketing to logistics to production to trademarks, patents, anything that could be useful to an entrepreneur. And in keeping with being useful to entrepreneurs, I have a guest on today I'm so excited about. His name is Michael Bernstein. And Michael has written a book. It is called The Ultimate Guide to Planning Your Personal Finances. Michael, thank you so much for joining me today.
It's great to be here. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit, Michael, a little bit about Michael Bernstein. What's your background? What do you do? Where do you come from?
Well, I grew up in the LA area, and I was born in 59, 61 years old. My father had a tax and accounting business. He also was in insurance at the same time, and he was studying to pass the bar. Very ambitious father. He really liked to study and learn. And so he always wanted me to come to the tax business. I didn't right away. I have an engineering undergrad, mechanical engineering, and I have an MBA. And I finally decided yes, because I really didn't care for engineering work out there. So I decided to join him, and I loved it and eventually bought the business from him about 33 years ago.
Well, that's
so
cool.
I have been working in the tax business, and I have a tax firm. I have a business partner of 50 employees.
50 employees?
15.
Oh, 15. Sorry. I'm sorry. Well, even 15. And, you know, that's a good sized firm. And you definitely qualify as an entrepreneur, a small business person. And your focus is primarily tax. So, but your book is about financial, personal finances. And of course, tax and personal finances are related, but not everything to do with personal finance has to do with tax. So if I purchase a copy of your book, which I plan on doing, what am I going to learn?
You're going to learn there's a lot more to financial planning for your life than the taxes, just as you said. So what happened early in my career, I was doing people's taxes. We do business, a lot of business taxes. I specialize in business, small business taxes, and we consult with businesses, and I do a lot of individual taxes here. And I found very quickly that other parts of people's financial life were not being taken care of. They didn't have the right insurances. They didn't have an estate plan. They didn't have a trust. They weren't saving properly for college for their kids. They weren't saving properly for retirement. And especially, frankly, business owners, they're so concentrating on developing their business, they forget some of the things that's very, very important to succeed at in other areas of their life other than tax. So I have been helping my clients over the last many years to address these items. Most preparers do not address them because there's really not a lot of fees. There's not a lot of time to talk about those things. But I think it's a mandatory item. I want to make sure my clients are well-rounded in their care, their financial care, and that they have two overriding things happening in their life: protecting their family and securing their financial future. And so entrepreneurs need to concentrate as much as anybody.
Yeah, and this is really important for entrepreneurs because I know so many entrepreneurs that I've worked with over the years who have built very nice, you know, successful businesses. They earn a good income, but they they're like 99% of what they're worth is tied up in their business. And even though they've been in business for 10, 15, 20 years, they've never taken money off the table out of their business and put it into something else to kind of not only provide properly for, you know, retirement years, but also to offset the business risk. And I had a situation with actually a friend of mine who built up a nice little business. We were able to sell the business as he was dying, unfortunately. But other than that business, he had absolutely nothing else to leave his wife. I mean, no real estate investments, no insurance policies, no 401k plans or anything. It was just the business. And we were really fortunate. We were able to sell the business for a couple of $1 million. But if we'd not been able to sell that business, like some businesses are so tied into the owners, once the owner dies, the business doesn't have much value. I mean, she would have been destitute. So yeah, so this is really, really important for businesses to properly plan, or business people to properly plan for retirement and investment outside of the core business.
That's exactly right. Because if you think about a financial planner who does an asset allocation for investments for a client, they don't put 100% of the stock in Amazon, even though Amazon may be a good stock. They'll diversify. You should do that in your life financially. So you're absolutely right about that. But we get focused sometimes on one thing, and someone needs to jolt us out of that, and this book will help you do it. What I wanted to do in this book, so I wanted to take the information I'd be giving my clients and encouraging them, put that in a very consumable book, only 70 or 80 pages long, only about 10 to 15 pages per chapter. And in one book, you get the six areas of life, financial life, that you need to address. You address these areas, you're going to be well on the path to protecting your family and securing your financial future. So the six areas are as follows: cash flow planning, insurance planning, retirement planning, college planning, estate planning, and tax planning, the one near and dear to my heart, but not really the most important as far as I'm concerned on these six.
So who do you think this book is targeted for? Because, of course, there's lots of books out there on personal finances. I mean, I read a book recently by, you know, Susie Orman, and it was an interesting book, but it was pretty basic, you know, basically cut up your credit cards and open a savings account type of thing. It sounds to me that your book might be suitable for somebody who's just a little more sophisticated.
Well, it's all the way from age 20, well, really earlier, high school, all the way to close to retirement, because even retired people have to do estate planning, and they have to do other types of planning related to that, and tax planning. So not all six apply to everybody at all times, but they all apply to everybody at some time. And what my book attempts to do is get as specific as I can within the 10 or 15 pages within that topic, so you have actionable items each right away from reading the book. You will read it, and the goal is to motivate you, encourage you to keep positive people around you, because this area of life is very difficult for people. You're not alone if you haven't done well in any or all the areas of planning. Probably 70 to 90% of the society either doesn't plan or they accidentally plan. So you're not alone if you have too much debt. You're not alone if you haven't done your trust. You're certainly not alone if you haven't done cash flow planning, and nobody likes to roll up their sleeves and do it. I shouldn't say nobody, most people. So the book kind of gives you little tricks and ways to try and move forward and address these items in a positive way.
Well, that is absolutely fantastic. And I'm going to say something to the listening audience. Please, please go out and buy this book. You know, there are lots of books out there on financial planning, but I'm a big believer that, as an example, I teach personal finance at Cal State University Dominguez Hills. I'm a professor. I teach accounting and finance. And I have a textbook that I use, and it's like a 500-page textbook to teach personal finance, and it covers everything you might want to imagine. But I have probably read at least 25 different books on personal financial planning and personal finance, and I would, even if you've already got a book on your shelf, oh, I bought a book on personal finance, go out and buy this one, because it's not everything is included in every book. I mean, you take the average size of a book, it's 100 pages, 200 pages, what have you, maybe 250 pages. It can't include everything. And every time you pick up, my experience is every time you pick up a new source, you come up with new ideas. So I've probably got sitting on my shelf, you know, at least 10 books on personal finance. I can see them right here from where I'm talking. I'm going to buy this book because I'm sure there's something in here that isn't in some of the other books that I have read. Michael, I want to get into your personal life a little bit. I understand you are an athlete and that you have done the Ironman.
I've done 3 Ironman races, yes. And I'm definitely an athlete. When I was very young, I was diagnosed with asthma. And luckily, my parents took me to a doctor who was very forthcoming at that time, those years. And he said, rather than just sitting down, be quiet, don't exert yourself. He said, exert yourself, take him to running events, have him play the trumpet, stuff like that. So they immediately, at 6, 7 years old, took me to the park and had me do, you know, there was a running track event every Saturday at the park. And I then by 8 years old, they allowed me at that time, they wouldn't allow you to run a mile at the 8 before 8, but at 8, I did my first mile and it was on long distance running from then forward. And I've done many, many marathons. About 20 years ago, I got into triathlons and I do Spartan beast runs and I did a 100-mile run. And, you know, I love working out. And so this workout has also, I can relate it to financial planning. Not just financial planning, money, all the areas I talked about, because they're all projects. Some don't take as long, some take longer. And so when I plan an Ironman, it takes 6-8 months to get to that Ironman to the right place, because I have to set the goal, I have to set a training plan, and then we have setbacks. I might hurt myself, or I might have to go away for a while, and I have to reset that plan. Can I still meet that goal? Do I have to move the goal to another time? This is exactly the same as any of the planning you do in your personal life on other items. So I was able to take that and I relate it to all the finances in my own life and relate it for people. So I feel like it's been a good relationship. And also, I love working out so much that if you go to our website, which is socal.bernsteinfinancial.com, and click on the YouTube, you'll go to YouTube and you'll see the Working Out Accountant Tax and Financial Tips. So I give like a minute to 3 minutes at a time. I'm working out and I'm giving you some financial or tax tips at the same time. So it's kind of funny to watch me trying to work out and also bark out the information to you.
That is amazing. So, okay, give me your website address again, because you said it very quickly. I want to make sure everybody gets that.
SoCal, SOCAL dot, and then company name, BernsteinFinancial.com.
Okay, fantastic. Fantastic. SoCal.BernsteinFinancial.com. Check that out. You get to see Michael Bernstein exercising and giving you tax tips at the same time. That's truly amazing. And by the way, I presume that if somebody is looking for tax advice or somebody to do tax planning or somebody to file their tax returns, if they own a small business, that they should also use that same web address to contact you.
Yes, they can. And we certainly are entertained taking on business clients. And as far as if it's just an individual client and you're not yet an entrepreneur, I would give guidance and advice until you had a business, because we're not taking on individual clients alone. But that doesn't mean if you don't have a question about the book, or I would be happy to answer it. Always happy to give answers to clients. Would you like some examples of some of the things in the book?
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. I'd love a story.
For example, I always tell people that you got to start with the cash flow. That's my first cash flow planning, because you don't know what you can afford in insurance or college planning or estate planning to do the trust or anything else until you set your, and I don't want to call it a budget, let's call it a forecast. I like being positive and understand if you're positive cash flow, if you're negative cash flow, why you are. Methods to fix it. But most people don't even know if they are in the first place. So in the book, I actually have an example of a 1 year laid out by month example of a cash flow for a family. And it has the net income, and has the expenses, and also has some retirement information at the bottom of that page on how to lay out your goals for retirement and numbers wise and how the spreadsheet could look. Now, what's important here is a lot of people will put in when they happen those expenses. I say no. I say you take any expenses you have for the year and make them monthly. So if you pay property tax twice a year, you add it up, divide by 12, and you put it in monthly. Every expense, you estimate your vacations for the year, put it in monthly. You estimate all the types of expenses, estimate your car repairs for the year, put it in monthly. This way, you know if you're positive on a monthly basis. You say, but Mike, I don't pay those things monthly. So I might be positive one year, negative another. Oh, no, no, no. I want you to set aside that money monthly for those items. So you will be positive or negative every month the same amount so that we know whether you're positive or negative for the year. And this way we can start by getting your cash flow down and understand where you can improve it if it needs improvement. So most people don't even want to do it because they're negative already or they're accumulating debt. Why would I want to even face it? Well, don't think about it's yours. You're helping somebody else. Put it down on paper. You can't fix it until it's down there. You can't face it. You can help facing it. And then there's many methods to get goals to try and improve it and get to where you want to be. It isn't always you can't spend money on this or you can't spend money on that. I got to limit my spouse. It's very important to get the facts down and then make the goals.
That sounds like a really good idea. And I like the fact that you're actually giving instructions on how to do this. I've read some finance books, personal finance books, that they have conceptual ideas. You need to create, a spending plan, but then they don't tell you how to do it. They don't give you any instructions. They don't give you any examples. It's like you should intuitively know how to do this stuff. And the reality is most of us don't know how to do a lot of this stuff. I find the same thing with entrepreneurs. I say, let me see your business plan. Well, I don't really have a business plan, but it's all kind of up in my mind. And I say, but you've got to write it down. And you've got to write it down in a way that makes sense so that not only you understand it, that other people can understand it as well. Let me diverse. Do you mind if I ask you a tax question?
Please go ahead.
I don't want to put you on the spot, but this comes up with I know a lot of what I call working entrepreneurs. These are people that have a day job. You know, they work for a corporation, they work for maybe the government. I find a lot of people who work for the government doing this kind of thing. And then they have a gig on the side. They have their own business. They could be running an internet marketing company, or they could be doing consulting or what have you. And they contribute at their business to, if it's a business, it's a 401k plan. Or if it's if they work for the government, maybe they have one of those 403b plans. So they're contributing there, but because they have their own independent business, they also would like to contribute to their own SEP IRA. And the question has come to me, and I'm no tax expert, but I've had this from a couple of folks, and they said, "Well, can I contribute both to my 401k plan at work, and also can I create a SEP IRA for my business and contribute to that as well?" So that is my question.
And yes, you can. If you created a Unique for your side business, then it'd be limited because they're both the same type of plan, and there's limitations on the employee portion to around $19,000, and if you're over 50, if you're older, or $26,000. But if it's a different type of plan, like a SEP, then you're limited by the total of for everything. So that's around $50,000 to $60,000 that you can put into those plans in total. So you have to look at all of them and make sure you don't go over the total.
Gotcha.
And so they combine. But yes, there are definitely plans for sole proprietors that they can put in more pension.
Well, that's great. That's a benefit of being having your own business and being a sole proprietor. There are tax strategies that you can use that will help you put away more money than you might be otherwise able to put away if you're just working for somebody else. Where do you see some of the biggest mistakes that people make in terms of either their retirement planning or in terms of their tax strategies?
Well, let's just talk about retirement planning first. There's a variety of mistakes. One of the main ones is starting too late. And the reason people tend to start too late is because they think it's all or nothing. Either I can put in $1,500 a month or $2,000 a month, or I do zero. Well, I say, no, 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 no. Put 100 a month in when you're younger. Put 150, put 200, re-increase as you go along. Try to get to the max eventually. And once you do a little bit, you get used to it. And then you get used to a higher amount and it adds up. So what I find is people just don't address things because they think they can't, or it's just not on their mind. That's the biggest problem in retirement planning, I believe. Not even where you invest it, not even whether it's pre-tax or post-tax. I always say, get it put away, whether it's pre-tax, post-tax, or how you do it, or what investment. That's a whole other question. Just get money going away on a consistent and long-term basis. As far as the tax planning, I think the biggest mistake is that people kind of don't know what's going on when they come to do their taxes. They think it's a mystery. No, no, you should be planning it during the year, either if you're doing your own time plan it or with your preparer, to know what the result is going to be along the way. So it's not this big surprise. Yes, laws change. Yes, you make a different amount of money near the end of the year that might do it, but you should be consulting with your advisor and making sure that you're planning and paying the right amount of tax in so that you're not surprised at the end and you won't have too huge of a refund at the end if that's not what you want.
Gotcha. And that all makes so much sense. Now, your focus is really the tax side of things, but, you know, there's this group of people out there, they're called financial planners, and they give advice on, you know, everything from some of the things you've talked about, like life insurance and 401k plans and savings and investing in the stock market. Where do you see the financial planner kind of finishing off and you starting? Where is the overlap between what the two of you might do?
For about 60 to 70% of the community, both of us, not me, but the industries don't address you. So the financial planners want you to already have 500,000 or $1 million. They already want you to be successful when they come to you because they want to charge you either for a out-of-pocket plan or they want to charge commissions on what they invest you in. So they want some assets. They're not going to take the person that's just starting out that has $50,000 to invest and say, okay, I'm going to spend a lot of time with you. So what the book is aimed at is taking those people, which is a lot of people starting out and a lot of people in the country, and saying, here's what you do. Here's what you do if you don't have enough for a financial planner yet. And when you do, do consult them. And by the way, the financial planner sometimes doesn't address the tax. Sometimes they don't address the estate planning. Sometimes they're concentrating on just investing your money. Why? Some of those other things don't have the fees related to them that they would want, so they don't spend time to do it. Just like tax preparers, most of them don't address those things. So once you do have, I would say, over $100,000 to invest or $200,000, you definitely want a financial planner, sometimes called a financial advisor, so that you can get proper asset allocation of your investments, diversify properly, and do some plans for the future.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. And just a word of caution about financial planners to our listening audience. And by the way, I have no problem with financial planners. The ones I have worked with and experienced and talked to, there is an asset allocation which they just have no interest in, and may be a fee-related thing. But I've never had a financial planner ever in my entire life, and I've talked to dozens and dozens of them, ever said, well, you should develop a nice little real estate portfolio. they just don't ever advise you to do that. They want you to put money in the stock market and buy insurance products and buy annuities and a host of other things, but they never talk about, hey, let's get a couple of rental properties going. So I think that's unfortunate, because I truly believe, and I know a lot of people who've have done extremely well, particularly in markets like Los Angeles and Southern California, by investing prudently, obviously, in real estate. So that's just an aside for me. Okay.
I'm a huge advocate of real estate investing as part of the retirement plan. Sometimes if you bring it up with your financial advisor, they'll say, okay, let's invest in a REIT. Real estate investment trust. So they're still controlling your money, but you're in a real estate type of investment. Mm-hmm. So that's the most I've seen them move that. Otherwise, they're saying, here's money out of your account, go invest in real estate. And they're not going to readily do that.
No, indeed.
Yeah.
We're, you know, The one thing about these podcasts and talking to people like you, I could just do this for hours and hours, and we are coming close to the end. But there is one other thing I want to kind of talk about. It's something that I see happen with entrepreneurs. They, you know, because tax rules and accounting rules are different, they produce a financial statement internally based on generally accepted accounting principles, and the financial statement shows that they, I don't know, that they made a small profit, you know, $25,000 or $30,000, maybe $50,000. But then they send their financial statements and their tax return to the bank, and the bank sees that the tax return shows a significant loss because the business has done things that allow them to take accelerated write-off on assets and other types of things. Maybe they file their tax returns on a cash basis as opposed to an accrual basis. And I have actually had businesses where they'd applied for a loan, everything looked good, the bank got their tax returns and says, oh, well, I don't care what your financial statements say. Your tax return says you lost $100,000. We're not giving you that loan. Do you ever coordinate or work with the gap side, the financial statement side of things, with when you're working with clients to make sure that what happens on the tax return doesn't prohibit them from potentially doing things like getting loans and financing their business?
Yes, and we do accounting work, monthly and quarterly and yearly accounting work for a lot of the clients that we do corporate business returns for. And I always advise them, do not give that financial statement to a loan officer without it going through us first. What we do at the end of the year when we do the tax return, we do a reconciliation. Obviously, we use the financial statement to produce a tax return, and we do a reconciliation of the two so we understand, of course, what adjustments were made to get there. And then when we discuss it with the loan officer, we indicate why it was done and why, for instance, depreciation should be added back. Or maybe there's some personal expenses on there related, like auto, that can be added back and create that profit again for purposes of qualification. And when it is showing a loss in the first place on the tax return and there isn't as much adjustment we can make for the client for the loans, I'm constantly asking clients what their status is of their real estate. Are they thinking of refinancing? Are they thinking of buying a new property? Let me know before you're doing that so I can advise you how to prepare for that in the next year or two with your financial. Be like selling a business. You don't want to decide today you're selling the business. You want to decide a year or two in advance so you can prepare the way you handle your cash and prepare your financial statements and handle your business so it puts in the best light.
That is just so important. And so coming up to our close here, I want to summarize with a couple of things, and then Michael will let you finish off. But having, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're a small business person, somebody who understands taxes, which is a moving target. The rules are always changing. And by the way, if you read some of those rules, I read tax rules. I've been scratching my head for hours trying to figure out what they're actually saying. It's all subject to interpretation. It's complicated, but it affects you as a small business man. You need a tax expert working with you. And it's not somebody you just call like once a year. You should be working with your tax expert, not just to file your tax returns, but to strategically figure out, you know, how you legally minimize the amount of tax that you have to pay. So, Michael, as we come to a close, please tell us again the name of your book, where we can get it, and your website, and how somebody can get in touch with you to perhaps use your services.
Okay. Well, thank you. There's three things I want to mention. First of all, the book is at Amazon. You can get it there. You can go to our website, and it'll lead you to the Amazon as well. There's an ebook at a lesser cost. I think it's like $5, and the regular book for about $20. And if you read this book, you are going to get nuggets out of it. Even if you've done a lot of your planning, you're still going to say, ah, I didn't know that, or I could do this. So please read it. I think you're going to be very satisfied with the down-to-earth consumable way I wrote it, number one. Number two, we have SoCal.BernsteinFinancial.com, which you can contact us through that if you have any tax questions or questions about the book or finances. You know, I'm happy to answer those. The last thing I wanted to say is surround yourself with positive people when doing these planning items. You don't need a financial advisor that's telling you you're doing everything wrong, you're not saving fast enough. you want the husband to tell you, fantastic that you're saving. Let's see how we can do more. Surround yourself with those people because that's moving you forward. And the last is, don't be discouraged if you're starting late, you don't think you make enough money, you don't think you have enough money. All those three are wrong. It's never too late to start. We can adjust the money situation and make goals and make changes. So you always want to move forward. Those are my parting words and actionable items.
Okay, fantastic. Well, Michael, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure. Again, my guest today, Michael Bernstein, author, tax planner, tax strategist, tax expert. This is the Polk Institute podcast. I am your host, Michael Manahan, and thank you so much for listening. I hope you join us next time.